Tonight's shiur for the week of Parshas Truma. We begin with a shaila. Once, there was a fellow, his name was Reuven. He owned an apartment, and he wanted to rent it out. Fine. So Shimon came, and he agreed. He signed the lease. However, he noticed that the apartment is on a low floor, first floor, and it's in an area where he'd heard that there were a number of gnevas, robberies. So he was getting a little bit nervous, and he wanted to have bars put up in the windows. We call them soragim here, and these bars, so that to prevent the ganavim from getting in. Fine, so Shimon turned to Reuven and said, would you mind installing these bars? Reuven answered back. He said, why should I? I'm fine. I own this apartment a number of years. I never have any gnevas. Nothing doing. I'm not putting any bars in. You want to do what you want, but I'm not. Okay, so Shimon saw he wasn't getting anywhere with his balabas. So he goes, okay, what can you do? Meanwhile, Shimon's wife, she said, I'm not moving in here until there's bars put on the windows. She was just very nervous. And Shimon saw, okay, if it's he already signed a lease. He has to live there. But his wife would not live there without the bars on the windows, so he had no other choice. And he had them installed for a hefty sum of 6,000 shekels. Okay, what can you do? So he signed the lease. The lease was signed for 2 years. And fine. 2 years were over, and Shimon decided to leave the place. So he gave notice to Reuven. He's leaving. So they came to leave. They made a little l'chaim, say goodbye to each other. And Reuven was just, he was ready to hear from Shimon that he's going to ask for now for the money for the bars that he's leaving behind, you know. So Reuven was getting a little bit nervous. He didn't bring up the subject, of course. He didn't want to have to pay for them. And lo and behold, what do you know? Shimon didn't bring up the topic either. He didn't say, I want money for these bars. Nothing. So Reuven's very happy. It's great. Guess he just forgot about it, didn't care about it, whatever. Good, wonderful. So that was the end of that. Shimon left the apartment. Next, what did Shimon do? He was spying out, came by every couple of days to see if, in fact, Reuven rented out the apartment to somebody else. The place was dark, 1 week, 2 weeks. Finally, sure enough, he sees that after about 2 months, somebody moves in. We'll call him Yehuda. Yehuda moves in. Ah, now Shimon says, here's my chance that I've been waiting for. Shimon knocks on the door, and Yehuda says, yes, who are you exactly? She says, my name is Shimon. He says, don't worry, I'm not going to bother you too much. I'm just coming to take away my bars. He says, you're what? He says, yeah, you see these bars on the windows? Well, I had them installed, and here he showed him, the receipt that he paid for them, 6,000 shekels. They're my bars, and I'm going to take them. So Yehuda says, what? You can't take... Wait a minute. Don't move. I'm gonna have to call Reuven. So he calls Reuven and his landlord, and he says, Reuven, there's a guy here, his name is Shimon, and he's come here to take his bars. He says, that's not fair, because when you rented me the apartment, it was as is, including the bars on the windows. You see? So you have to pay Shimon now for these bars. If not, I'm going to leave this apartment, and you're going to have to pay for all my expenses, etc., etc., etc. Well, Reuven now is in a pickle, because Yehuda was right. Yehuda rented the apartment with the bars, and now Reuven had no other choice to have to pay the 6,000 shekels to Shimon in order that Yehuda shouldn't have any complaints. However, he was upset, and Reuven, that he had to pay for them, and he says, not fair. says, why? Because when I said goodbye to Shimon, claimed Reuven, we made our little l'chaim. Shimon didn't say anything. So I assumed he doesn't care, he doesn't want the bars anymore. And so why should I now have to pay him? You know, he tricked me. He specifically didn't ask it, because he knew the way of getting it. He knew that if he would ask me for the bars, I would just say, no, go to pay for the bars. I would just told him, yeah, go take them. I don't want them. Why should I pay for them? Go, you want them? Take them off. He knew I would say that. So he waited till somebody moved in and pulled a fast one on me. He says, that's not fair, and I don't want to pay for these bars. So, question, who is right? The answer is from an interesting Gemara in Maseches Bava Basra, Daf Lamed, Amud Beis. The Gemara there brings a case where Reuven was sitting on a certain specific land for 3 years. Along comes Shimon, and he was the previous owner of the land, and he says, what are you doing in my land, Reuven? This is mine. So Reuven says, excuse me, what do you mean it's yours? I bought this land from Levi. And I've been sitting here for 3 years. I have a chazaka. I can prove it to you that I have my bill of purchase from Levi. And I bought it from Levi, and I've been here for 3 years. It's mine. So Shimon says to Reuven, very nice. I believe you. Of course you bought it from Levi. But where do you think Levi got it from? He stole it from me. It's my land. Levi stole it. And then he sold you a bill of goods. He sold you the land that he stole from me. It's really my land, so get off it. So what does Reuven counter? He says, ah, Shimon, you're telling me it's your land and it was stolen by Levi, who I purchased it from? Nothing doing. I'll prove it to you that that's not the case. He says, I have here Edim. And he finds his two Edim. And he says, these two Edim will testify to the fact that when I was contemplating buying this land from Levi, I asked you for advice. I knew you know about real estate and things. I asked you, what do you think? It's a good deal. Should I buy this land from Levi or not? And you gave me the advice that I should buy it. Well, if it was your land to begin with, why would you tell me to buy it from Levi? You should have said, what do you mean buy it from Levi? It's my land. It was stolen from me. You didn't say that. You gave me advice to buy it from Levi. It's obviously not your land. If you're the one that told me I should purchase it from Levi. So the Gemara says, what does Shimon counter? What's his return on that one? So says Shimon. He says, that's not a proof. He says, you know why I gave you advice to buy it from Levi? Because Asheni Noach li Harishon Kasha Imenu, Zalashna of the Gemara, meaning, because I knew it's going to be very hard to get my land back from Levi. Because Levi is a tough guy. It's going to be very, very hard for me to take him to Beis Din and to get my land back. I know you're a nice, fine gentleman, easy going. From you, it's much easier. So that's why I told you to buy the land that was stolen from me from Levi. I gave you that advice so that I can get it from you much easier. So the question is that a Taina that we listen to? The Gemara says, in fact, that yes, it is. And Shimon is believed. He believed that the advice he had given was just so his land will be transferred from the Gan of Levi to Reuven, where he can get it from him in an easier way. As an aside, the Sma, the Sefer Me'iras Einayim and Shulchan Aruch, Simen Kuf Mem Vav, writes that even though we listen to this Taina, it wasn't a proper thing to do to begin with. That's called Lifnei Iver. Somebody asks you for advice, expects you to give honest advice. And here, it wasn't just a good honest advice, it was advice for his own purposes that he can get his land back. So it's not a proper thing to do, but if he says he did it, he did so, he is believed, and Taina is a Taina, and in this case, Shimon could get his land away from Reuven. Therefore, so too, in our case here with the bars on the windows, that the Shimon could say the same idea. He says, The reason why I didn't say anything to Reuben when we had our little l'chaim, I didn't mention the bars, is because I knew exactly that. If I would try to get the money for the bars from Reuben, he would just say, yeah, you want to just go take your bars. I don't want to pay you. I knew that was going to happen. So therefore, he said, well, an easier way of getting my bars is through Yehuda. Have the other person move in and then get it that way. And that's a taina that is in fact accepted, would be accepted and based in. And therefore, in conclusion, the bars would have to be paid for by Reuven to Shimon in this situation. Next, we have a shaila of Hilchas Shabbos. It was once a woman that she went into labor on Shabbos. So her husband, which they had planned, was going to take her to the hospital in their car. Okay, so she gets into the car, and they start driving to the hospital. What happens? Pella. Even though in the very city which they live, there's a very, very good hospital, but instead of, again, this is on Shabbos, instead of driving to that hospital, which was quite close by in the city, they travel to totally different city, to a hospital in another city on Shabbos. So, Baruch Hashem, everything went well, they got the hospital, and she gave birth, etc. But after the birth, the father of the woman that gave birth asked the couple, you know, I don't understand. There's a very good hospital in town. Why would you travel all the way to this other hospital, another city, on Shabbos to give birth? So what was their answer? They said, well, because we heard that this hospital was offering a deal, that any woman that gives birth here gets a free baby carriage. So the father's like, what? You mean you're machalal Shabbos to get a baby carriage? That's not called pikuach nefesh. That's called pikuach mamon. You just wanted to get a baby carriage. That's why you traveled the extra deal. Anyways, what was the shaila? The shaila that the couple asked, they realized that it's probably not the right thing to do, what they had done. However, their question was, are they allowed to use the carriage that they got for giving birth in this hospital? Okay, so first of all, it's clear that what this couple did was a no-no. You don't go traveling to a far-off hospital just to get a baby carriage on Shabbos. That's clear. However, the question is, were they in fact over on an Isser Deraisa of traveling on Shabbos or not? Well, we have a source, similar source, from the Maharshag. The Maharshag has the following shaila. There was a person who was a chole sheyesh bo sakana. His life was in danger, and he needed to have a fig. He had to eat a fig. Well, there was a fig lying there on the table. Okay, so get the fig from the table and give it to him. Give him to eat. What does this person do? Instead of giving the fig that was just lying there on the table, he went and he picked a fig from a tree and gave it to him. So the question is, was he over on an Issa D'Raisa? On the one hand, he picked a fruit from a tree, which is an Issa Torah. On the other hand, okay, even though there was one ready available, but Lamaisa, he did save the guy's life by giving him the fig. So in fact, the Marshag Paskin, that he is not over on an Isser Torah. He shouldn't have done that. I mean, there's a fig right here on the table. Why are you picking the fig from the tree? But bottom line, in the end, he did save the person's life by giving him that fig, and therefore, it's not called an Isser Torah. That's what the Marshag says. However, Rav Yashiv, Zatzal, he argued with the Marshag, and he said, nothing doing. He said, it's definitely Chilul Shabbos. He says, what would it be like? Imagine, you know, you have this person, he's seriously ill, and he needs this medicine, and right here on the table is the medicine. And what does the person do? He goes here, and he gets into his car, drives to the drugstore, and buys the medicine, brings it back, and he gives it to them, when there's the exact same medicine sitting right on the table. So what are you going to say? Yeah, okay, but he still saved his life. He goes, nothing doing. He goes, that's called Chilul Shabbos. That's called going for a tiyul on Shabbos to the drugstore when you have the medicine right here. He says, that's not called saving a life. That's called going on a trip, a tiyul. And therefore, Rabbi Yasha Paskin, in fact, that it's an Isser Torah, what this couple did as well. That, okay, they, in the end, they, you know, it's pikuach nefesh, it's a drive on Shabbos, they give birth, that's true, but not if you have a hospital right here and you're stumped just for monetary reasons in this case to get a present, you go driving to a far off hospital. So that's, according to Rabbi Yashiv, is an Isser Torah. Okay, now back to our question though, fine. Let's say, well, it's not so fine, but this couple transgressed an Isser Torah by driving to this far-off hospital. However, now that they got this agalah, are they allowed to use it? So, pashtus, they are, would be allowed, because even though one is not allowed to get hana from malachas Shabbos, that's only direct hana. In other words, a person cooks food on Shabbos, so you're not allowed to eat that food that was cooked. That's called direct pleasure from the malacha of Shabbos. However, here it's very indirect, right? They're not because they drove, and then they got a gift, and the gift they want to use the gift that was given for someone who gives birth in that hospital, and they have that they went on Shabbos. That's already very indirect grama. Therefore, they would be allowed to use this agalah that they received, the baby carriage. However, says Reb Zilberstein, if they would like a kapara, somewhat of kapara, for what they had done, he said, you know what they should do? They should take this baby carriage and give it to a poor person. He says, we find a similar idea in the Sefer Hasidim, in Simon Kuf Peyala. He says that he brings a case of a Jew that was Mechal Shabbos, by it that he carried his money or whatever in the street, and he came to a chacham to ask him, what should you do for tshuva? And he told him, the money that you carried, or at least the value of the money, if you don't have the actual money still, should be given to a poor person that it would be otherwise embarrassed to accept tzedakah. You should give them this money, and that should be somewhat, at least, of a kapara for the Chilul Shabbos. I have here a quiz, chida. The riddle goes as follows. We have two materials, two things. One is kosher, and the other thing is not kosher. How could it be that you take the kosher matter, put it on the unkosher thing, and after doing so, the matter that was kosher becomes unkosher, and the matter that was unkosher becomes kosher? How could that be? Give up. The answer is salt placed on meat that has to be kashered. The salt is something which is kosher, regular salt. You can eat salt, it's kosher. The meat is not kosher, needs to be salted. So you have our kosher thing and our unkosher thing. Then you put the kosher thing on the unkosher thing, you put the salt on the meat, then what happens? The salt absorbs the blood, so now the salt, which was before kosher, becomes unkosher. And the meat that had the blood in it, but now it doesn't have the blood anymore because the salt absorbed it, the meat now becomes kosher. So here we have it. The kosher thing, the salt, becomes unkosher, and the unkosher meat, after salting, becomes kosher. We move on to a heartwarming story of a mice that happened in America. number of years ago, there was a Yid that he lived in an area just outside of Philadelphia, and he had rented a motel. And him and his family lived in this little motel, and he rented out the rooms. That was his parnasa. So he made a living, and made a nice living from this little motel. However, as things had it, the country took a crash financially. And all of a sudden, companies were going bankrupt left and right. Even the banks were closing up, etc. And many thousands of people were found unemployed, lost their jobs. And of course, when things like this happen, the businesses which are more luxury oriented, they take the brunt of it first. And so, too, our friend over here, who had this little motel, I mean, people aren't so quick to go to motels and motels, when they're strapped financially for money. So, as a result, this Yid was suffering, and people weren't coming. Very few people were staying in his motel now. No people, no money. However, not only was his business, this is his place where he lived. And so he hoped that, things happen, things go up, things go down, markets go up, go down, so hopefully, it's to hang in there a little bit, and hope things will change. However, it wasn't changing so fast, and he wasn't having an income, and he had to pay the rent to the landlord, for the motel. He didn't have the money. His landlord was very strict with him and said, listen, if you don't pay up tomorrow, that's it. I'm kicking you out. You and your family, find another place. So he had some savings accounts that he put aside, for his the future of his children. And he had no choice. He had to open them and take the money out and to pay for the rent. So he opened this account, opened that account, paid. But in the end, all his savings was gone, and he still owed more money, and he didn't see the light at the end of the tunnel. Still, financially, there's problems in the country. So he didn't know what he was going to do. He was on tremendous pressure. He had no place to go to, no parnasa. He couldn't just leave. He had no house, is where they live. And what was he going to do? In the meantime, this kid, he had some young children. One of them was an 8-year-old boy, and he saw what was going on in the house. How his father was pleading to his landlord, to give him a break, but it wasn't happening, and they were threatened to be kicked out. So the boy said, I got to do something. I got to help the situation. So what, in fact, did he do? He opened up a little lemonade stand. The motel was right off the highway, so he went to the side of the road, made himself a little booth, a few blank planks of wood, and he wrote a big sign. He painted in his own kid's handwriting, and he said the sign said, "Help me save my family. Right, our landlord is threatening to throw us out. Buy a cup of lemonade for $2 and save us, by being evacuated from our home." That's it. He wrote something to this effect on this big board, and he put his jug to a lemonade, hoping he'd make some money. So, he got a little bit of response. He had about, for the day's work, he got about 6 people that stopped and bought some lemonade from him. At $2 a cup, that's $12. Well, $12 for an 8-year-old kid, that's a nice amount for a day's work. However, it's not going to exactly help pay for the rent. But the child, he stuck with it, and said he's going to, next day, again he goes out, His father saw what was going on. He came up to him and he felt terrible. He says, "What are you doing?" He says, "You don't." He told his son, "It's okay. Well, somehow we'll manage. I don't expect you to try to, you know, to help us financially. We're okay somehow. Shem Yazor. Just go play with your friends." But his son said, no, I'm doing this. I don't care." And he again opened up the stand the next day. So he sold two or three cups of lemonade until all of a sudden a car pulls over and he starts talking to the boy. And he didn't realize at the time, but this fellow who stopped was actually an editor of a weekly magazine, very famous magazine in America. And he saw the sign and the boy and he kicked out of the house. He started asking him questions, whatever. And he said, "Wow, this is a great human interest story. You know, this kid trying to save his family, selling lemonade." So he took pictures of the boy and the sign and the lemonade, the whole thing. And sure enough, he wrote up a nice, heartwarming article about this boy trying to save his family from eviction, etc., etc. Well, wouldn't you know it? You know, that's what advertising's all about. People started read this article, and it came, you know, went to their hearts, and they said they want to check it out. Let's see where this is, who this boy is, and what he's doing. And all of a sudden, cars started flocking the stand, and everybody wants to help out this poor kid. They start buying lemonade from him. So he couldn't handle all the crowds himself. He had his brothers and sisters to you know, keep making more lemonade. And wouldn't you know it, after 2 weeks of being in the same spot, he sold no less than 3,000 cups of lemonade. Make a cheshbon, 3,000 times $2 each, $6,000 in 2 weeks. Well, this now did have an impact on this is about half of the amount of money that his parents owed and that he came up with. Not only that, the end of the story is that the landlord himself, you know, saw the article and saw what was going on, and he called up the yid and he said, "Listen, you know, I see what your son's doing, isn't that, you know?" He says, "Shake his hand for me, because this boy is going to go somewhere in the future." And he says, and he all of a sudden softened up, and he said, "You know what, I'll give you a break on the rent, and I'll give you easy payments, whatever, for whatever else you own." And in the end, Baruch Hashem, everything worked out for the best. That's the story. And what can we learn from this story? What morals? So, it answers a question. People ask, how could it be, you know, we're davening for the Geula, how could it be that the Geula is going to come when in the past generations there were great tzaddikim and they couldn't bring the Geula? So what? I'm going to bring the Geula. We're going to bring the Geula. We can't come near to the level of these great tzaddikim. So how are we supposed to bring it? The answer we can learn from this story of this young boy. He says, Dafka. Why was he successful? Because this little kid, look what he's trying to do, and unbelievable. And because he's a little kid, that's what opened up the hearts of people, and that's how he's able to be successful. So to us, because we're in a time when there's so many nisyonos, and it's very hard to keep the Torah, but we, because we're little compared to the earlier generation, but we still are able to do a mitzvah here, do a mitzvah there, despite all the difficulties and of galus and these times, that is definitely what's going to bring the Geula, like the boy in the story that he brought the salvation for his family. And similarly, however, you know, like the boy when he felt bad for his father and their matzav, they're going to be kicked out of the house or whatever. So also we should feel the same way. That our father, Avinu Shebashamayim, our father in heaven, he's also kiviyachol kicked out of his house. There's no Beis Hamikdash. So if we feel bad for our father, like this little boy felt bad for his father, so then hopefully we can also, just like the boy saw the geula of his family, we can hope to see the geula shlema b'meir b'yameinu. Amen.